Welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Thank you for joining us. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, D.C., in for Peter Clodi.
So the whole thing was that these were young people who were saying we are leaderless, we are partyless, we're tribeless. We just want you to listen to our frustration.
A Kenyan court suspends a move by the police to ban protests in the capital, Nairobi, and surrounding areas until further notice as young people plan more anti-government protests.
First in the line of presidential succession, Vice President Kamala Harris would be a logical choice. 58% of Democrats think Harris would make a good president, according to a new poll from AP North. But just 30% of Americans overall think she would.
President Joe Biden's campaign says he will stay in the presidential race despite calls from some of his top allies to drop out.
I think the economy has always been key in determining any election. Most opposition parties would rely on the economic conditions to make a case against the government. I mean, that's what the current government, the incumbent, who's currently being led by the vice president, who was once a deputy governor of the Bank of Ghana. He was very, very vocal when it had to do with issues of the economy back then.
And as Ghanaians gear up for presidential elections in December, analysts say the economy will be at the top of the agenda. We have those stories and more coming up right here on Nightline Africa. For our top story, a Kenyan court this week suspended a police ban on protests in the capital, Nairobi, stating that citizens have a right to demonstrate peacefully. Before the High Court's decision, police had barred protests in Nairobi indefinitely, saying that they lacked leadership that would ensure peaceful demonstrations. Anti-government protests continue around the country, spearheaded by the nation's Gen Z population. The protests erupted in response to planned government tax hikes, which were subsequently scrapped following a series of violent demonstrations. Joey Mothengi is a Kenyan journalist and social media influencer. She tells me that the role of social media in the protests can't be overstated because it has provided a space for young people to share real-time updates, organize logistics, and foster a sense of community among the protesters.
That's exactly how it started about a month ago. It was definitely a movement that no one saw coming in terms of its momentum and, you know, the impact it's had. But yes, so the whole thing was that these were young people who were saying we are leaderless, we are partyless, we're tribeless. We just want you to listen to our frustration.
And how did the initial protests against the planned government tax hikes evolve into this broader anti-government movement?
To be honest, I think it was social media education, like civic education via social media, because as the protests began because of the finance bill, the very first hashtag was hashtag reject the finance bill, which, you know, we saw kind of go global. And now young people asking themselves, how is my life going to change? My life is hard enough. For example, right now I'm unemployed. I'm trying to make ends meet. And you're adding taxes to my life. What does that mean? You know, costs of living. So we started seeing more young people involved in getting to know more about this bill and just realizing how, you know, out of control it was and how many people's lives would be affected and just your daily life, how it would be affected. And so once they were educated, they were like, we cannot have this happen. This is unacceptable. And so that was the beginning of the Gen Z movement was the finance bill, definitely. But it definitely grew from there.
And how has the government responded to these protests, both initially and in the current context?
Initially, I think the government was very much caught off guard. They were like, who are these young children talking to us? You know, they were like, they like to call us my sons and daughters. You know, they were kind of dismissive at the beginning. Like, what do you mean?
Condescending in some way.
Yeah, condescending, right? And, you know, young people made it known that we're not going anywhere. We have no jobs. We can do this all day. And so that's when we started seeing the impact, as I was mentioning earlier, where the president actually withdrew the finance bill, even if after it was voted through in parliament. We've recently seen the resignation of the Inspector General of Police, who a lot of people were criticizing during the protests, the firing of the entire cabinet. All of cabinet secretaries were were fired by the president. So there has been movement, and that has been encouraging to young people, but there's a sense that it's just not enough. So, as much as we're getting, little bits of, we're seeing, okay, they're listening, at least they're listening to us, but I still don't think that they understand the full extent of why the youth in Kenya are mad. This is about much more than the finance bill. It's about corruption and wastefulness and politicians who flaunt their wealth to us and just not being accountable for their expenses. And it's so many things. It's so much deeper than that. And I think that's what young people kind of wish, the old guard would understand. It's so much bigger than just one thing that will silence them.
And how does the involvement of young people in political activism today in Kenya compare to previous generations? I know you and I have over the years spoken time after time about Kenyan politics, protests, and things of this nature. But give us a little comparison on how you see these how these are different from the previous ones.
This is very different because the youth who led this movement are fearless. In addition to being leaderless and partyless and tribeless, they're fearless. I feel like as a millennial generation and the generations before us, people were kind of content with the status quo, and they're like, "This is how things have always been. This is how I've grown up. Politics is gonna happen regardless of whether I participate or not. It's not about me. People are gonna vote according to tribal lines, and that's just what's always happened, and that's what will keep happening." But now this Gen Z movement is saying, "No, we do not have to accept that." When you look at just the Kenyan population in general, Gen Zs are 33% of the Kenyan population. And when you add the millennials in that equation, you get about 55%. So these are literally the people who are going to be running the country in the future. So they're saying, no, right now we can't, we will not accept it, and we will not continue to accept the way things have been in the past.
That was Joy Muthengi, a Kenyan journalist and social media influencer. She was speaking to me from Nairobi in Kenya. And from Kenya, let's go to Bangladesh, where thousands of university students are continuing protests against the government, calling for the scrapping of what they say is a discriminatory recruitment system that favors certain groups of people for high-paying government jobs. At least 20 people were killed in the clashes this week, most of them in the capital, Dhaka, with police firing tear gas and rubber bullets to scatter protesters, who also torched vehicles and establishments. For more on the story, I reached Sabir Mustafa, the managing editor of VOA's Bangla Service.
So the protests have been going on since the beginning of July. Their main grievance was that the government promised to end a quota system for government jobs, which reserved government jobs for various interest groups and special category people. Something like 56% of jobs were reserved for these categories. And so the students felt that the general public, particularly the people at the universities, were being deprived of their opportunity for government jobs through this quota system. So they have been campaigning for an end to the quota system, and the government promised that they would end it. But they felt that the government was using the courts to kind of bring back the quota system by the back door. So they started protesting again in July. And this was kind of peaceful demonstrations. They were holding rallies and processions, everything. But on Tuesday, things got out of hand, and the government's own student wing, the Bangladesh Chhatra League, BCL, they started kind of attacking these protesters in the university campuses. So that created a massive fighting between the two groups. Now, the protesters are much larger in numbers. So the government, pro-government people, were kind of supported by the police as well. And six people were killed during that day. And they called for a general strike on Thursday. So, yesterday, on Thursday, another 25 people were killed in fighting all over the country. And they have continued the general strike today, Friday. It's a weekend, but still. And the fighting seems to have intensified in Dhaka and other parts. And we're hearing that maybe another 30 people may have died today, although it's not, the numbers are not fully confirmed. But the fact is that a lot of people are dying over the last 2 days. And there is no end to this, to this violence. The protesters are not just demonstrating anymore because they are confronting the police, and they're also setting fire to places like they set fire to the National Television Center. And we are hearing reports of a prison being attacked and inmates being freed in another part of the country.
How does this job quota system fit into the broader socio-economic context of Bangladesh? Why is it such a contentious issue? Are there any other, you would say, underlying issues or grievances that are fueling this protest beyond just the job quota system?
So the job quota system has existed for as long as anyone can remember. And this was designed to help women, people from deprived regions of the country to get government jobs. And the biggest chunk of the jobs reserved for families of freedom fighters, people who took part in the country's independence war back in 1971. Now, the students have been demanding that the freedom fighters are mostly retired and or dead. Their children are mostly, in jobs. So there's no need for a 30% quota for them, and this should be distributed among general students. And, people would get jobs on merit. Now, the government did not want to play ball with that. So the students have been getting a bit angry, and more students feel that they're being deprived. Now there is an underlying current here, because the country has been in one, under the rule of one party since 2009. And the last two elections were seen as basically rigged elections. So people are already angry that they're not getting opportunity to vote properly in an election. The last election was boycotted by the opposition, and the one before that was also boycotted by the opposition. So there's an underlying anger that they're being deprived of their democratic rights. But at the same time, there are reports of massive corruption among government circles, which are going unpunished. And young people feel that although the country is supposedly progressing and there's good economic growth, they don't see the jobs coming out. So it's kind of a jobless growth. And the corruption means that they're not getting a fair shot at government jobs either. Either they're being deprived by the quota system, or corruption is allowing government's own people to get the jobs. So there's a lot of anger among young people. So it's not just the quota. The quota is like the straw that breaking the camel's back. And the government understands that. The government knows that it's a much deeper anger that's propelling this movement. That is why they're a bit concerned. That is why they've deployed police in the street to kind of suppress this movement, because they know it's not just the quota. There are other grievances which are kind of fueling the anger of the students.
That was Sabir Mustafa. He's the managing editor of the VOA Bangla service. Here in the U.S., President Joe Biden's campaign released a statement that he will stay in the presidential race. But with more Democrats publicly saying the president's chances of winning the November elections are slim, there's still a possibility that Biden will bow out. If he does, Democrats must make a swift decision on who would replace him and how. VOA White House Bureau Chief Patsy Widakuswara has this report.
President Joe Biden is currently under COVID isolation at his Delaware vacation home. Should he drop out of the presidential race, one scenario would be for him to endorse an alternative candidate. Almost all of the 3,896 delegates meeting at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago next month have pledged their votes to Biden, who won every primary contest in the country. But under DNC rules, that pledge can be changed, said John C. Fortier, an election expert at the American Enterprise Institute via Skype.
There may be some negotiation if Joe Biden were to decide to step aside to say, maybe we could at least encourage or endorse or try to set in place a way that Vice President Harris might be the nominee. But there's not an absolute guarantee or legal way for him to switch his support to her.
First in the line of presidential succession, Vice President Kamala Harris would be a logical choice. 58% of Democrats think Harris would make a good president, according to a new poll from AP NORC. But just 30% of Americans overall think she would. Publicly, she supports Biden.
Joe Biden is our nominee. We beat Trump once, and we're going to beat him again.
period.
As part of the Biden-Harris ticket, Harris can spend their campaign funds, which stands at $91 million, according to their last filing report in June. Nominating Harris, a black woman, could also help secure African-American votes, a core block of the party's support. However, Democrats may also want to avoid the undemocratic appearance of an automatic coronation, especially if others say they want to be the nominee. Possible candidates, including three state governors, Gavin Newsom of California, Josh Shapiro of Pennsylvania, and Gretchen Whitmer of Michigan. The Brookings Institution's Elaine Comerck is author of a book on how America nominates presidential candidates. She spoke via Skype.
The goal of the party will be to have some sort of process before the convention and at the convention that allows whoever gets into the race to court the delegates. It could be any number of things. It could be regional meetings. It could be a debate.
At the convention, Democrats must also decide who will be the vice presidential nominee, another process that could create both excitement and division. Jennifer Mersicha, professor of political communication at Texas A&M University, via Skype.
Whoever is the loudest in critiquing Harris as the choice will probably be the sort of faction of the party that gets their nominee into the VP slot. But, you know, it's all speculation at this point. We have no idea. We've not seen anything like this before.
Ahead of the November elections, that's a lot of turmoil for Democrats.
We will very quickly make America great again.
While Republicans have just ended their convention, showing unity behind their presidential nominee, Donald Trump. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to Nightline Africa on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Bonganyi. Let's go to West Africa, in Ghana, where Ghanaians are preparing for elections that will be held on December the 7th of 2024 to choose the president and members of parliament. Vice President Mahamadou Bawumia will be the flag bearer for the ruling National Patriotic Party. He'll be running against Ghana's main opposition leader and former president John Dramani Mahama of the National Democratic Congress. Analysts say that the country is currently facing its most severe economic crisis in a generation, marked by unprecedented levels of inflation over the past 2 years. Business reporter Pakwesi Asare tells me that as the election season approaches, Ghanaians are raising questions about the causes and potential solutions that will restore stability and growth to what used to be one of Africa's most prominent economies.
The government has, attributed the current economic decline to the Russia-Ukraine war, to the COVID crisis, which, led to restrictions in, exports, imports, trade lines and all that. But of course, I mean, back home, there's that argument about, the fact that the government in itself did not manage things well. I mean, there had been that penchant after this new government took over to borrow a lot from the international capital market. Mm-hmm. And over the period, we had borrowed in excess of $13 billion from the international capital market. And
so what was that $13 billion? What did it do?
That's the multi-million dollar question that's on the lips of everyone, And so for most people to just attribute the current economic crisis to Russia-Ukraine war and to the COVID crisis, yeah. I mean, and so the situation had become so terrible that we had to go to the IMF. And even the process by which the government had to eventually admit that it was such a bad state was fueled with a lot of drama.
Right. How is this being reflected in the population locally? How are people feeling this pain? Is it higher prices, consumer goods more expensive? What are some of the, like, as a business reporter, telling you?
On the macro level, government would tell you that things are getting better. Of course, inflation 2 years back had hit about 58%, and today inflation is almost a little under 30% or so. So you could see that things are getting better. Interest rate, for instance, are going down, but not to the extent that you would wish. I mean, ordinarily people are still feeling the pinch because government, for instance, the fact that government has been priced out of the international capital market means that government has had to resort to domestic borrowing on the treasury market, which is more expensive, and it's crowding out the private sector. You see what I mean? So interest rates are really high. Government is continuously borrowing. Private companies would have to borrow at an even higher cost, and they would have to pass on these costs to the consumers. And so on the surface, on the macro level, the numbers look good, but it's not reflecting on the ground because we're
not filtering.
No, because we're having fuel prices go up. You know, prices of goods and services continuously are shooting up. You know, we are going through an oil an erratic power supply, and you could feel the sense of frustration amongst the youth, and that's why we've had to see hundreds, if not thousands, of youth, you know, migrate, you know, to the Americas, to Canada, to UK, in seek for greener pastures.
So you have elections in December coming up. How will the economy play on the minds of the voters and the politicians? Is that something that they're talking about more than anything else?
I think the economy has always been key in determining any election. Most opposition parties would rely on the economic conditions to make a case against the government. I mean, that's what the current government, the incumbent, who's currently being led by the vice president, who was once a deputy governor of the Bank of Ghana. He was very, very vocal when it had to do with issues of the economy back then.
When he was running.
You know, hoping to come into power. He was very, very clear about the depreciation of the local currency against the US dollar. Today, we're seeing that same depreciation. The US dollar to the cedis almost hit about 14%. Massive depreciation we're seeing. Prices of goods and services have skyrocketed. Joblessness among the youth, a lot of despondency. And so, I mean, you ask yourself, what has been the major difference since he came into power? You know, they came in to do a banking reform, which led to a certain... there was some crisis in the banking industry. They had come in saying they were going to reform the crisis, which led to lots of jobs being lost by people. And so I can tell you for a fact that a lot of people, I mean, when you go to social media where people are talking, they're saying that, look, things are even worse than, you know, when they took office.
Right.
And so the economy will be a major determinant in this year's election.
The irony is that he will be running against the same individuals
he was against the former president, John Dramani Mahama, who transitioned from being a vice president to becoming president. He was president for 4 years, hoping to do another 4 years. Unfortunately, things were so bad during his time. There was Doomsaw crisis. You know what the Doomsaw is?
Yes,
electricity crisis,
yes.
Which had you know, gone on for a period of 3 years. Thankfully, that situation normalized. It got better before he left power, which was used against him by this current government.
The current government.
And currently, what we're seeing is a return of that power crisis.
That was Ghanaian business reporter Pakwesi Asare. This is The Voice of America. A community of breastfeeding women in Uganda is giving hope to mothers struggling to feed their newborn babies and keep them alive. However, with the growing demand for breast milk, the community members are finding it hard to recruit more willing mothers to join the cause. Halima Atumani and Mukasa Francis have the report from Uganda's capital, Kampala.
In March this year, Baba Ziresti, a mother of two, had a near-death experience that left her suffering from anxiety and trauma for 6 weeks. 36 weeks pregnant, Resti was discovered to have placenta previa grade 4, a condition in which a mother's placenta lies over her cervix. She was hospitalized with a uterus rupture and internal bleeding and had to undergo an emergency C-section to save the baby. As the baby fought for his life, Resti suffered a cardiac arrest and was placed on life support in the intensive care unit, ICU. Resti woke up 2 days later to find out that her premature baby, who weighed only 2.2 kilograms or 4.8 pounds, needed breast milk that she was unable to provide because of her medical condition. So he had to be put on a glucose diet.
And later, he was given powdered milk, but unfortunately, he faced a condition called NAIC stage 1, whereby he wouldn't digest the powdered milk well, so he was supposed to get breast milk. So the fact that I was in ICU, I couldn't breastfeed the baby because ICU has a lot of infections and all that, so we had to look for an alternative.
Luckily, Resti came to learn about Alisa Taha and Tracy Ahumuza's organization, the Utter Breast Milk Community, who could offer the much-needed help. She quickly enrolled and her baby started receiving breast milk from a donor. Utter Breast Milk Community was started in 2021 by a mother whose newborn baby girl underwent surgery immediately after birth. 3 days later, the baby passed away, leaving a grieving mother with full breasts. Rachel Akujiziwe is the administrator at Utter Breast Milk Community.
Because she had a supply, she asks the doctors, where do I put the milk? They told her, all we can do for you is to give you tablets to dry it up. She's like, but you see, I needed it. Meaning, there should be a mother or so, a baby who needs the breast milk.
Akujiziwe says the breast milk comes from mothers who have babies from newborns to 6 months old. She says before accepting women who are willing to donate their breast milk, the organization administers a blood test to exclude those with tattoos or who do drugs.
The blood work that we do, we check for HIV, check for hepatitis, we check for syphilis, we check for CMV. They are screened before they start donating, this milk.
Sadia Hussein Mulangwa is a mother of two and a breast milk donor. She says after giving birth to her first child, she didn't produce enough breast milk and had to initially keep her newborn on formula milk. When she returned to the hospital a few days later to get her baby treated, a nurse taught her how to position her baby during breastfeeding. Hussein says she is now producing more breast milk than needed and able to preserve the extra.
The fulfillment that I will get from this, knowing that I'm saving a life somewhere or giving better health or just a better living to a helpless child, I'm like, what bigger sadaka is there than that, really?
Dr. Doreen Mazakwe, a medical doctor and lactation specialist, says newborn babies should be fed on demand, especially preterm babies. With a growing number of mothers giving birth to premature babies due to causes such as urinary tract infections, malaria, trauma, and multiple pregnancies, among others, Mazakwe explains why breast milk is best for babies.
Research has shown that preterm donated milk is best suited. Rather, a preterm is better off getting milk from a preterm mother because that milk is different from the mother who is producing mature milk. Okay, so and it supports their needs best.
The Utter Breast Milk Community says they have helped over 500 babies over the past 3 years, providing 800 liters of milk from close to 150 donors. Halima Othmani for VA News, Kampala, Uganda.
Nigeria's population is on track to hit 377 million people by 2050, highlighting the urgent need for reproductive health services. But cultural and religious barriers often complicate access to contraception, causing economic and maternal health issues. Gibson Emeka Godwin reports from Abuja.
Nigeria population is surging and family planning are lagging behind. Cultural and religion preference for large families with misconception about birth control are making the situation worse. Philomena Okoduwa knows this struggle well. Once against family planning, she now fends for 6 children with a meager income from petty trade. She regrets not embracing family planning sooner.
We cannot move forward like that.
She says things are very bad for us. Even to take care of the basic need is a struggle. I wish I knew about family planning earlier. I wouldn't have had so many children, but maybe 2 or 3. The World Bank reports Nigeria fertility rate is 5.3 births per woman, much higher than the global average. Furthermore, 23% of married women lack contraceptive, according to the Guttmacher Institute. Religion, culture, and limited access act as a barrier. Canon Dauda, a Christian cleric, and HK Oji, a family planning advocate, explain how this factor impacts decision.
Some believe that you give back as much as you can, that whatever God permits to be alive, he will provide for them.
Oji points out that Nigeria has a hard time finding contraceptive.
Nigerian women are saying, I want family planning, but they're not getting the services. But as we speak now, because the federal government did not put money for commodities purchases, so there are stockouts across the country.
The 2024 World Population Day promote family planning as a human right. Oji reiterates that barrier to birth control violate women's rights and increase maternal health risk.
Because of lack of proper family planning services, a lot of women are having pregnancies they don't want to have. We have also seen that if women have frequent babies, their bodies do not recover properly because a lot of our women are sub-anemic. And the only thing that can stop all of this is appropriate family planning services.
High fertility rate also strain Nigeria's economy. Abuja-based economist Paul Alaja warned of the consequences.
But in the case of Nigeria, where resources are relatively very scarce, where poverty is high, where longer and deprivation seems to be evident, continuing high fertility rates may be a recipe for disaster. If you look at our school children now, it's in millions, now tens of millions. And if you look at poverty level, it's also very high, especially among women and children.
Despite the benefit, funding for planning remains inadequate. The Nigeria government plans aim to rise the rate of contraceptive use from 19% to 27% in coming years, but more resources are needed. ESPA says improved funding and access can significantly reduce maternal mortality and empower women as well as the nation. Gibson Emeka, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Right now, it's time for music from our African collection. Enjoy what we have with you. Top of the mix is Sowe by Bruce Melody.
We never end because it's plenty. The more the girls want to get me. For me, baby, you are the best. My head, my shoulder down to my belly. Your love is sweet when I drip it. Because you see me with Katie. It's not enough to leave me. I can never do.
they don't wanna cry no more. Nobody don't wanna die no more. I'm sure nobody don't wanna go hide no more. You don't wanna go cold after line no more. Nobody don't wanna cry no more. I seen years go by, but band been flying more. Sometimes you gotta lose the battle just so you can win the war. You gotta go back and forth from the court to the roast to court. Two new wax, you playing expensive sport. Me and Bobo cut into the hood, Lamborghini Aventador. I know it's a two seat, but they say less is more. I lost so much beats, feel like I need a pedicure. Best still coming with questionnaires, how can I live my life in fear? I came up, now my wrist is shedding tears. I got this hunting filled with Nina bells, I don't know if death is near. Caught me up by a tour, bro, let me do stats, come like he the engineer. 15 with a sawn off long like a bottle of Belvedere. Next thing I'm in H&P, I really had to get mail in there. You know work got sold on the road, I made work still selling there. I see niggas fall start singing like Ella Air. Nobody don't wanna cry no more. Nobody don't wanna die no more. I'm sure nobody don't wanna go hide no more.
Yeah.
You don't wanna go cold after line no more.
Yeah. I wasted a mil on drip, all I rock is gym wear. 4 bags on t-shirts, 2 bags on skincare. I gotta keep my skin clear. I don't know about cues, just walk straight in there. You sing that Shaqie song with your chest beat, cause ain't been here. At the top, it's me. It gets lonely sometimes and I look down to a sigh of relief. Cool. My flow's tight like Gage and Fee. I'm a grown man, I don't do on Saturday, wait and see. I put 2 plates on the side of the game, lay down on my back, then bench it. All you can do with your fist is clench it. I might Dave and cinch it. Take a look at these diamonds wrong, then a man will go turn you sprinter. I do the Uno reverse, my ski all summer, do beach and winter. I just laugh when they say that I can't go higher. I'm a frequent flyer. My last album's cold, my new one's fire. I might call it Maya. I got back pain and I got neck pain, cause I got the weight of the game on my shoulder. Kept saying that it weren't no fluke, I was young like Luke, now I gotta be Yoda.
Nobody don't wanna cry no more.
You don't.
Nobody don't wanna die no more. Sure, nobody don't wanna go hide no more.
All your tears, baby, let me hear.
You don't wanna go cold after line no more.
We no send young man who buy the banner, we spend.
We
Azulia pack them, don't bracket you are like a lopper.
Who spray
me? Mama, throw it for the boys for Zanga. Hey, or the world challenge us, small boys, they cannot think of that.
It's the same. 100
million is an
insult. But I say, now we can put their bills at bomb boys. See how we did to feel they ball like Tinubu. No man check on the boys, let's get them.
Hey, I don't follow for the game where they play my advice. If you want follow kill it where I like, you go tell I.
Why?
You got the walk from sunrise to sunset like a dial. You got the run to fall. You got the hustle full cause Gamburo dies.
Yeah. 20 color for my niggas for borrow. Pull up with a gang of the leeches, no Simono. Pull up to bat it, man about me, I run on the practice. Chipping out cash, pick up my auntie. I'm the lasagna, but I'm the ashes.
Yeah, yeah. How many men they kill to fill my body? Oh? You cannot spot on my white shanky body. Oh? Pull up and spray my pumpy, oh. I don't get time for money, oh. They cannot be my party, cause Calamari will spill their country.
I'm Costa, come pop like one time. We'll blow the money up, everybody, they run the beat like Costa. Yeah, Versace, Fendi, and Prada. Louis Vuitton, Cushetti, Oshetti, why they bada? The money long, empty hammer. I know they play with them, it's the return of the
shot. The club, we no send young man who buy the bar, now we spend. Azuliak by them, don't bracket you are like a lopper.
Queen of rap.
Mama, throw it for the boys for Zanga.
Show me
a boo. Or the challenge of small boys, they cannot think of that.
It's the same. 100 million is an insult. All I say.
Yeah.
Now we put their kids, their bomb boys.
Fuck small children.
Now we did to the ball like Tinubu. No man check on the guests, just get a Tinubu.
You go say I.
da 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 da.
Yo, kill.
Link with the killer them, sink is the Trinidad. Pick up the will of them. Come on, get a no idea. Anything I do, headline news. If you waiting, I no do. Then go say I do. Nothing but the truth, and I step up in the booth. No lie, my life no be smarting. Remember last Christmas, Santa Claus gave me the glizzy with the switch dog. So some people no go see this Christmas. Man, them a grasses, most of them not even Christians. Click bang, body sinking at the quicksand. See deck full of bomb like Afghanistan.
And if you make kai, come in on the enemy, them a plea, and me know they're not sorry for me. People are ball and a skin, can we bad than we mean? Bloody crime scene, calamity. And so we shoot up, we and figure Canada G. Make them have our experience, no gravity.
Tell them we not laugh up, we not dead dog. Violate people are dead dog. Should I keep in your bed, cars? The Taliban's them a med work. We not laugh up, we not dead dog. Badness are where we end us. When I shoot people, we end up in a red grass.
No Taliban's like them near your show guns. Make you not sleep at your yard in a 4 months. And so we make people a mourn out. Like y'all get down a house. Laugh bars full of kids that me show about. And if you see me travel with a 9X, and none of no politician with me, I go vote out. 4 kilo, 4 seat and 4 rounds.
Them on the tea like Lipton, and let the best boom boom, they are Kingston. So me buy a Birkin for Jada Kingdom. Some people vex on my phone, get bring down. Me too rich now, so me buy 6 more. What's the plan? Cause I'm real to my skeleton. If you insult my intelligence, then I make the sparks fly like electrician. Lock off traffic, car tragic, bear panicking. Freeze up like mannequin, as you can manage when pellets them traveling.
Tell up to me. We not dead dog. All your people are dead dog. You should have keep in your bed, cause the Taliban's them a make quack. We not laugh, oh, we not dead dog. Badness are where we end us. We not shoot people for end up in a red grass.
Follow go Atlanta.
Tried to get by, but I'm burning. I'm behind my mind, it One is the joy that you cannot waste, and the other one price that you cannot fix. This is the peace that you cannot buy, finding a way where you cannot see. Man with this system, he cannot pray. I need to find relief. Far behind my mind, it runs. All these thoughts are troubling. Funny to give up my pain. Funny to be on my lane. My mind running to the other side. When it's time to leave my life, then it tries to take me out. Tell you what I need, right? Yeah, I really need my love. I really need, I need a free mind.
That was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, including producer Macbill Yabaro, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, if you break every relationship you have with someone who says something bad about you, you're going to be eating dinner alone. I'm your host, Jackson Vunganyi, in Washington, D.C. Good evening, Africa.
Make me swear. Make me harder, make me lose my breath, make me water, make me sweat, make me harder, make me lose my breath.
So show me that you understand how I like it.